Welcome to the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters show. My name is Kieran Pedley. Certainly so much to cover in this podcast. This is a sort of Brexit special, if you like, where fellow podcaster and I, Leo Baresi, will be talking about the EU referendum vote and then what that means now for politics in the UK. This show was recorded on Wednesday evening and therefore before the YouGov poll that showed Theresa May leading Boris Johnson by 17 points. I'll give some thoughts on that poll at the end of this show, but for now, here's the original recording of me and Leo discussing what happened last week and what happens now. This is the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley, and I must admit, I'm not entirely sure where to start. Last week was probably one of the biggest political events in our country's history, certainly in my lifetime, and maybe will be for the rest of my lifetime. Britain voted to leave the European Union, and certainly felt like something of a shock, even though the poll suggested it was a close-run thing, or at least some of them did. Me and Leo Baresi will be taking you through the fallout from the Brexit vote. We'll be reacting to what happened, looking at whether the pollsters should be criticised as much as they have been, and we'll also be talking about what happens next for the Conservatives and for Labour. I think it's safe to say that anybody listening to this podcast will know this by now. But of course, David Cameron has resigned. There will be a new Prime Minister. We're not 100% sure on who. And meanwhile, Labour has descended into civil war. And we're not quite sure on the outcome there either. Needless to say, this uncertainty is very worrying for everybody, whether you're a politico or just a normal person who voted in the referendum or maybe didn't. Certainly, we are in choppy waters, and it'll be very interesting to see what comes next. But Leo, thank you for joining me. We're on the audio, obviously, only this week. Back in Tip TV next week, possibly. But I mean, I want to talk about the polling in a moment. But first of all, we talked about off air that we don't really have much new to add to the shock of Brexit. But what was your kind of reaction Thursday night? I mean, even though the polls were quite narrow and neck and neck, no one really expected us to leave, did they?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think one of the things that we need to talk about in terms of the polling is the difference between what the polls said and how the polls were interpreted. And, you know, I need to recognise and accept my guilt right from the start of being one of those people who looked at the polls and didn't say, this is what the polls are saying, I'm going to take it at face value, but said, this is what the polls are saying, I'm going to interpret it and put some additional numbers. Essentially, I'm going to put my thumb on the scales because that's what I think is going to happen rather than taking them as they were. And I think that was my undoing and the reason for my surprise.
And I suppose in our defence, given what happened last May, it was even for a pollster or even for people that are interested in data, you're still reasonable for you to be somewhat sceptical. And we spent many a podcast just sort of looking at that modal difference, didn't we, between phone and online, which was there. But I've seen a lot of people criticising the polls, and I suppose understandably so. They did certainly seem to be showing a move towards Remain, and we could talk a bit about that. But I suppose the big winner was online polling, wasn't it? Because actually, TNS and Opinion got it pretty much right. And actually, even though YouGov had a 51-49 lead for Remain, that's well within the margin of error. One of my observations really on referenda is that, you know, actually we get these numbers and call it 51-49, but actually what it really said was things like 46-45 with, you know, 9% don't know or something. And, you know, just removing those don't knows creates almost a false impression of certainty, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And even, I mean, you know, it would be pretty hard to ever persuade us to move away from that, but reporting those numbers as absolute numbers rather than as a range within the margin of error also gives us that false sense of confidence. So when we see 51-49, we think, well, so it's going to be on that side, rather than thinking, well, that's somewhere between one side winning or the other side winning, and we don't really know which of those is the right answer.
I mean, we were talking off air about the you know, the debate about how we read data, and one of the things I've always been big on is, you know, looking beyond the horse race. I sort of think we're obsessed with it. You know, understandably so, because, you know, the media and us politicos, we want to know what the answer is going to be. But I think maybe we should be less obsessed with that, which is in the horse race question, meaning, you know, what percentages remain on, what percentages leave on, you know, the Tories are 6 points ahead of Labour, etc., etc. Maybe we should be treating that as much more indicative than certain. And looking below the numbers, I think in the last general election, we saw very clearly Ed Miliband was sort of preferred less, if that's a rubbish wording, but, you know, David Cameron was preferred more as Prime Minister to Ed Miliband, and, you know, the Tories were trusted more in the economy. And you could sort of, even though it's hard to extrapolate from that what that means in terms of vote shares and seats, the macro story was there. And I wonder, you know, we might disagree on this, but, you know, we looked at some of the numbers over a period of time, and clearly immigration was the number one issue. Clearly the economic message wasn't cutting through, because around sort of, paraphrasing here, but around sort of half-ish, or maybe 40 to 50% said they didn't think that Brexit would have any, you know, impact on their personal finances. You know, maybe the Brexit coalition was always there in the numbers underlying, but I think you maybe disagree.
Yeah, I see the attraction of saying there's a lot of data out there, we should be able to find something interesting and some signal in amongst all the noise. But like, I've never been comfortable with this argument, because it always just feels a bit like astrology to me, that you've got loads of numbers and anyone can look in them and find a story that tells them the answer that they want. So you talked about the election and the best Prime Minister numbers. Now, I can't remember off the top of my head what they were, but let's say it was 65% thought Cameron was best Prime Minister to 35% thought Miliband was. Well, what does that tell us? I mean, you know, that tells us that he's a bit more preferred, but that's no good for actually telling us that the election result is going to be 37 to 32 or whatever. All it tells us is maybe Labour are doing a bit worse and Tories doing a bit better in the horse race numbers. And I think that this referendum has really undermined that argument. So on the eve of the election, YouGov had a poll that asked whether people thought it was risky to leave or risky to remain. 54% said risky to leave, 35% said risky to remain. Now, that's one of those classic questions that those who look beyond the horse race like to look at and say, ah, okay, in the privacy of the voting booth, people are going to think, yeah, actually, I don't want to take the risk, and so we should look at that and not the horse race. Well, guess what? The horse race was right, and that sort of let's look beyond the numbers and put our own interpretation on it was wrong, or at least the horse race was a lot closer. I sort of feel, you know, I think it's time to dampen down a bit this let's dig in the other numbers and we know better in the horse race. Well, I think it's resurrection.
I sort of disagree slightly, because I think it's a, you know, it clouds things, because it's subjective and you kind of have to take the data you've got and decide what you think the most important thing is. So you talked about the privacy of a polling booth there and risk. There's also a completely counter argument that says the privacy of the polling booth, I'm worried about immigration actually, and I'm worried about sovereignty.
Well, quite. And therefore, which one do you pick?
Well, you know, exactly. And I completely understand what you're saying, that that's, you know, ultimately a matter of opinion. But that still doesn't mean that that isn't the right way to look at polling, because maybe we should stop thinking that opinion polling and data can give you certainty.
Yeah, but why are you saying that on a few days after we've just had a couple of pollsters getting the election pretty much spot on?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, but others didn't, did they? I mean, you know, we've got Ipsos, Comres, Populus, all giving it very, you know, different numbers. And I suppose even the ones that did, even the online polls that did show sort of either the right result or kind of near the right result had seemed to be moving back towards Remain. I suppose the one we missed, I think, actually was ICM, because they didn't do one on the last week.
Yeah, and, their last one was pretty much right, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were consistently showing Leave ahead. So
yeah.
Anyway, I mean, that's certainly going to be something to keep an eye out for in terms of, I guess, how people trust polling in the future. I don't want to spend too much time on that, but I mean, I suspect that line that anybody that's losing can use, who trusts the polls anyway, will still be used. But then,
now they're going to say who trusts the phone polls, perhaps.
Well, maybe. But then the very next day after the referendum, people started to look at polling about the Scottish independence question. So I think people have goldfish memories when it comes to, I'm never going to use polling again. And then there's a poll out that says Scotland's going to go independent. It's like, oh, look at this poll. So I guess maybe we'll be back sooner rather than later, sort of scrutinising them. Before we get onto the Tories and Labour, there's a couple of polling bits to bring up, because obviously people are starting now to poll what's coming out of the referendum question. There's a couple from YouGov I want to bring up. So, on a second referendum on Britain's membership of the EU, obviously there's lots of people, David Lammy being one of them, in his wisdom has decided that its Parliament should either overrule the Brexit vote or there should be a second referendum. We don't have to accept the vote, he says. and others have this view, I think it's fair to say, based on, you know, okay, some people would say because the Leave campaign was based on, in inverted commas, lies, then that's legitimate. I mean, that's for other people to judge, I suppose. But 31% in this poll support a second referendum, 58% oppose. And then, in addition, an additional piece of data, 27% say that the UK should try and reverse the referendum decision and stay in the EU. Now, I suppose the problem with that question is I'm not entirely sure what that means. I mean, does that mean by another referendum or parliament? But at the moment, not a huge appetite for another referendum campaign.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, look, the idea of putting the country through another referendum now when not really anything has changed and it's just a matter of opinion whether or not the Leave side lied. I mean, it's for the birds. That's not going to happen. And I think the public are quite rightly looking at that idea very sceptically. I think what's interesting and where it might change is the question of a second referendum once the UK's terms of exit are a bit clearer. So if at some point we've got a negotiated deal on the table, essentially the idea that Boris put down at the start of the campaign of we'll have a referendum to decide to leave and then we'll have a second one to decide what the terms are. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if at that point the public opinion has swung a bit more towards, okay, it's a bit clearer what the options are, let's decide it now. But look, the idea of a referendum now just because one side feel aggrieved, that's not going to happen. And to be honest, I'm kind of relieved that the poll has reflected that because it's just a non-starter.
Yeah. I mean, we can never know what's going to happen in the future, I suppose, particularly on this issue. But I wonder whether these people that think, let's say Boris brings the Norway option, that's the so-called Norway option, which means free trade, but free movement, you know, remains. I mean, I don't think that's what's going to happen. But leaving that to one side, if you put that, yeah, I think there are some people that hope he puts that to a referendum and the no vote means stay in the EU and the status quo. I'm not 100% sure that people are going to say, oh, you haven't delivered free movement, therefore let's stay in the EU, which definitely doesn't give you free movement. I sort of find that difficult to see happening. But then I suppose this is all for the birds a bit. We don't know what deal Boris Johnson is going to negotiate. We also don't know it's going to be Boris Johnson. And let's move on to that and talk about the Tories a bit. Because I suppose one of the things I keep coming back to with these people that think the vote can be reversed, if you like, is, yes, there's a democratic argument, which I think is important. But actually, the terms of this are going to be dictated by the Tory party, aren't they? And yeah, it's hard to see how the Tory MPs, Leave MPs and membership almost allow someone to try and go to Brussels and not put free movement on the table. But before we get to that far, what are the polls sort of suggesting on next Tory leader? Because it's quite a complicated process, isn't it? The Tory MPs whittle the candidates down to two, then the membership votes on that. So it's not quite the same as typical polls where we can put put lots of hypothetical candidates in there, but that's not the dynamic of the race, is it? I mean, what's out there and what's your sort of assessment of it?
So I'll start with what isn't out there. The single thing that we most need is a reliable poll of Tory members, which we don't yet have, and I think we've got to hope that we'll get one soon. The second thing that we don't have, and who knows, we'll probably not get this at all, is a real poll of Tory MPs, because they are the two selectorates that really matter here. So what we do have is firstly a YouGov poll of Tory voters, which I'm not going to talk about because it's of some interest, but it doesn't really tell us anything about who's going to
become leader. But this show Tory voters turning against Boris a little bit and turning towards May, but you think that's not relevant?
I just don't think this is it. This is interesting for this conversation. I think, look, we can look at Labour voters and what they thought of Corbyn to give us a very good analogue of this, that, you know, it's kind of interesting, but these are not the people who are deciding. The people who are deciding are such a small subset of them that they're in no way a representative sample. I'm just not that interested in that. What we do have that's more useful and relevant is the latest Conservative Home poll, which has May and Johnson essentially tied in the lead with 28% ahead of a couple of people around 13%.
But those couple of people are probably quite important, aren't they? Because if we assume that they're, you don't have to assume, there will only be two candidates. So let's assume that it was May and Johnson, and there's no guarantees that it will be those two. Who are the other candidates? Because presumably their support goes elsewhere, and that might tell us a bit about which way that race would go.
Yeah, so the ones trailing are Leadsom on 13, Fox on 13, Crab on 9. Now, there was a rumour, I think, earlier today that Leadsom might not be standing. I don't know what the latest is on that. Mm. I think Fox and Crab definitely are, and Javid is in there as well, and he's on the Crab ticket. I mean, firstly, so this poll isn't fantastically solid. It's not a members poll, so I wouldn't treat it as completely kosher. I think one of the really interesting things that struck me about this is we were talking a few weeks ago about the previous version of this poll from the start of the month, which had Gove in the lead on about 30 points. Now, he was taken out from this poll because he obviously isn't running. Mm-hmm. And what struck me is it seems like his supporters didn't just go to Johnson, as you might think that they would if it was a matter of leaver or a remainer. Mm. It seems like quite a lot of them went to May. So, I mean, I'm not sure how much sort of we should try and extrapolate from that, other than I think taking the lesson that it's going to be a bit more complicated than you might think. That yeah. I wouldn't at any point want to say, well, Leadsom drops out and she was a leaver, so therefore all of her support is going to go to another leaver, because it seems from the experience of Gove that it doesn't particularly happen like that.
Yeah, and I suppose if you try to read between the lines on this, on the dynamics of that race, Liam Fox feels like a dark horse. I don't see him becoming Prime Minister, but presumably he's just going to stand on a out-is-out sort of platform, and it's not quite clear at the moment what Boris is standing on. Theresa May is an interesting... So with Liam Fox, I mean, you know, we're out of the single market, really. We're doing controls on free movement. Boris is trying to sell have your cake and eat it ticket, it sounds like, although he's a bit ambiguous on what he's selling, frankly. And then Theresa May, I don't know. I don't know whether she's the, we're gonna stay in the single market and accept free movement candidate, I don't know. But then that doesn't sound very likely. I'm a bit sceptical about Theresa May. On the one hand, yes, there will be an anybody but Boris. But on the other hand, you can't ignore the fact that she is the Home Secretary and immigration ballooned, and they failed to get the immigration down to the tens of thousands. Why would you trust her as Prime Minister to do that? And she also backed Remain. And I mean, I saw Jacob Rees-Mogg on Sky News, I think it was yesterday or the day before. He's been on pretty much consistently. But yeah, he was saying, but she was a Remainer. And I think the host, whoever it was, said, but she was a reluctant Remainer. And he said, but she chose Remain. And I don't know. I mean, I wonder whether we're kind of ignoring the inevitable here, which is that, you know, Boris Johnson is going to be the next Prime Minister. It would take some political incompetence for him not to seal the deal, I would have thought.
Well, but, I mean, the thing that we're always in danger of missing here is that, sure, he's very popular among the public, but first he has to get in the top tier amongst MPs. Mm. Now, the last time I saw in the lists that were declared or semi-known about that Guido Fawkes was putting together, Johnson was doing quite well, and he was, I think, possibly in front. But I don't know, I'm a little bit unsure about how far he's going to go. Perhaps I'll be completely wrong. Look, I have no claims to understand the Tory party and the dynamic of MPs, but it seems to be very interesting, a couple of things. Firstly, the fact it's a secret ballot means that there's not going to be any effect of people feeling like they've got to back the winner because they need to get a job. So if people don't like Boris but think he's going to win, well, they don't actually have any particular incentive to back him in the way that you would with a public ballot, so in the way that everyone had to back Gordon Brown in 2007. And then just the interesting dynamics of, as people start dropping out and there starts being a feeling of coalescing against a candidate that others don't like, look, it's going to be a complicated set of dynamics. But I have just wondered, I don't know, maybe she's now dropped out, I'm not sure, but whether Andrea Leadsom genuinely could start attracting lots of people as a solid, reliable, credible leaver. Now, I don't know, maybe that's just not going to happen at all. But it feels like Johnson's biggest weakness at the moment is the single thing that's most important, which is he's not seen as credible, as serious, as able to take big, tough decisions and to reassure the country in a moment of crisis. Now, you know, if we were in good economic times, perhaps it would be different. Perhaps all that stuff wouldn't matter at all. But I'm just not sure. I just feel like, you know, won't Tory MPs be looking at him and thinking things are going really badly economically? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of trouble ahead. Boris Johnson is not a serious man for this. And you might be right that there might be this Rees-Mogg feeling of we are never backing a Remainer, which is just why I'm wondering if a serious leaver who's able to be leave but not to but is able to negate Johnson's weaknesses, like Leadsom, who knows, perhaps by the time anyone's listening she's already gone. But you know, perhaps it's Fox.
I find that hard to believe. Social media, she still seems to be in. I find Fox hard to believe too. But there's definitely a message there that says gotta make sure we do leave and leave and leave in the right way and on the part of the Tory grassroots, I mean. So I guess we'll sort of see what comes out. I mean, there's lots of twists and turns and manoeuvring behind the scenes, I'm sure, in terms of who gets Chancellor and who gets what and all the rest of it. So stay tuned on that. I'm sure we will get that Tory members poll. That was me and Leo Barassi there talking about the fallout from the Brexit vote and the Tory leadership contest. Now, we're going to return to our conversation in a moment when we talked about Labour and what maybe comes next with UKIP as well. But I thought this was a good moment to pause given the YouGov poll that came out last night. And I think it's fair to say from the YouGov poll findings, I'm certainly the one in the wrong here, and Leo's looks right. There was a poll of Tory members yesterday which showed in a runoff Theresa May convincingly beating Boris Johnson by 55 points to 38. And that clearly shows a strong degree of popularity for the Home Secretary amongst the Tory grassroots, which, to be fair, we've known is there. But it is interesting that she's so convincingly ahead of him in a hypothetical runoff. Now, some of the so-called internals, the numbers under the numbers, if you like, give us a reason why. When we compare Theresa May to Boris Johnson, she leads him on strongest leader by 44 to 29. She leads him on best at uniting the Conservative Party, which I think is going to be a key component of her pitch, by 46 to 16. And she also leads him on a number of other sort of leadership-related issues, such as, you know, most prepared to take tough decisions, best able to handle a crisis, and best at negotiating a new relationship with the EU by 32 points to 22. So there are a series of metrics on which Theresa May looks very strong. Now, those two weren't the only leaders that were tested in this poll. George Osborne, Liam Fox, Andrea Leadsom, and Stephen Crabb were tested too. George Osborne, still amongst Tory grassroots, is understood to be, you know, best understands the economy. Now, that is probably not that surprising because he is the current Chancellor. But you do wonder if he was to back Theresa May, you know, his kind of handling of the economy, if you like, added to her safe pair of hands and strength of leadership, could be a really potent ticket. I still would have one sort of slight element of warning with this poll, though. You know, it's one poll, as we know. Now, the Jeremy Corbyn polling last year of Labour members moved pretty quickly once Jeremy sort of entered the race. So things can change. And I still think there are those fundamentals about the fact that Theresa May is a Remainer and her inability to control immigration or deliver the sort of tens of thousands promise that David Cameron inadvisedly promised, frankly, will come back to haunt her, I think. And I certainly think there is enough there for Boris Johnson to fight back on. There are also other areas where he does beat her. Best media performer, I'm not sure is particularly relevant. But he leads her on most in touch with the concerns of ordinary people, the most intelligent, which is, I'll leave that for other people to judge, but surprising, but also understands what it takes to win elections, which is presumably a lot to do with his victories in London and just the fact that he's a bit of a winner. So there are still more than enough there for Boris to fight back on, I think, but certainly it is a turn up for the books that Theresa May leads him convincingly. I think it's something we need to keep an eye out on. But anyway, back to our conversation with me and Leo Barassi this week, where we talked about the Labour leadership and the potential for an upcoming general election. I suppose one consideration that's going around Westminster at the moment is this idea that there might be a snap election, although that seems to have cooled a bit at the moment. But then we should bear in mind that we're only in sort of June, July, and you know they're talking about October elections. A lot can change by then. that seems to have galvanised Labour into action, the prospect of a snap election. That certainly seems to be my judgement, that yes, for the Brexit idea, that Corbyn let the Labour Party down in his sort of half-hearted campaigning for Remain, certainly was something that they feel might shift the membership's opinion of him. But I sort of feel like the reason that they've moved so quickly and so decisively, which is unlike the PLP, I think that's fair to say, is because of this idea that, crap, we're going to have an election in October and therefore we've got to try and get rid of him. So obviously I won't recap everything that's happened on this because I think people listening will know that. But obviously there's been this vote of confidence, vote of no confidence. 80% of Labour MPs have indicated that they do not have confidence in Jeremy Corbyn. I don't think he can fill a shadow cabinet at the moment. At the time of recording, he seems to be struggling on, but Tom Watson and Angela Eagle seem not particularly keen to actually formally challenge him. I mean, if there is an election in October, it's a real mess for the Labour Party, isn't it? It's almost bizarre that, you know, all the Tory mess and the Prime Minister's resigned and they're having a leadership contest, Labour seems to be more of a mess. I mean, what's your assessment of all of that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And there's a bit of anger, more than a bit of anger, amongst Corbyn supporters about the timing, about the feeling that this is a moment when Labour should be capitalising on Tory weakness. Look, I can see where they're coming from, but you know, if from the perspective of
just to interject there, Harry Leslie Smith has tweeted what the PLP are doing to both Jeremy Corbyn and his anti-austerity platform makes the Salem witch trials look benign. So there clearly is anger around, as you say.
Never one to let fly is Harry Leslie Smith,
whoever that is.
Look, I mean, this was always going to happen at some time, and I think it was fairly clear that the causus belli of the referendum going for exit, I think was going to be as good as anything for the people who wanted to move. I mean, what's been sort of on my mind and frankly worrying me is it's this. Encapsulated in this quote from The Wire that I've sort of had running around my head for a few days of, you come at the king, you best not miss. Mm. And it's just like, if Labour go for Corbyn now and don't dethrone him, then they're stuffed. There's no way that they're getting rid of him. It's a one-shot thing.
And to be fair to him, and I rarely am, this is a perfectly legitimate reason for him to say to bring in mandatory re-selection, isn't it? Because he can say, if he wins the leadership,
yeah,
surely, well, if I was him, I'd say as part of that leadership contest, I'd say, I'm your man membership, but the PLP won't play ball, this is why we're here. We should have the right to not only elect me, but to reselect the MPs so that we could actually reflect the platform that you want. I mean, you might not agree with that should happen, but this is he should go all in if he's gonna still be there, shouldn't he?
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And to be honest, I'm sure the PLP know this, that if they don't take him out now, then they might. I mean, it might not just be a sort of moral victory he's got, but it gives him the opportunity to secure the levers of power even more firmly. And there really might not be another opportunity. In which case, you know, I think that's the point where we. It's no longer just a sort of a fear. The party really will have to split at that point because there'll be a lot of people essentially out of jobs.
I mean, one of the things that I've sort of tweeted furiously about, and you know, I think it's starting to get picked up, certainly does look like it has. Perhaps it always was, but I've only started to see it talked about now, is that the two main candidates to replace him, Tom Watson and Angela Eagle, I keep wanting to call it Angela Eagle, which is that's an accidental slip, both voted for the Iraq War. And we've got the Chilcot report out allegedly next Wednesday or next week, where God knows whether it'll actually be out. Lots of talk of Jeremy Corbyn either as sort of wanting to expel Tony Blair from the Labour Party or worse, or call for sort of war crimes trials and all sorts of things. But if you're... I'm just trying to see this through the prism of the people that actually will choose the next Labour leader, if there is indeed a contest, or you've got to assume there's going to be. Now, there's 60%-ish, I think it was, support of him. Obviously, the non-Corbyn faction needs, 10.01% swing, you know, to get him out. So, you know, there is going to be this Corbyn, no matter what, you know, Corbyn or bust group, but, you know, that might not necessarily be all of them, so that's fine. And there is a logic to saying the EU referendum will be the reason why whoever the alternative candidate is takes Corbyn on. My concern is that the resurfacing of the Iraq War will remind the Jeremy Corbyn supporters why they voted for him in the first place. And look, I'm not going to suggest for a second that it means that somehow everyone that supported him still does. But if you couple that with the union support and a desire to continually recruit more people, as I sit here now, and people may disagree, I still think Corbyn's a favourite to remain Labour leader and a challenge.
I've swung both ways on this. I started out looking at those numbers, the kind of thing you were just reflecting then, and thinking, OK, so he won decisively in the first membership, in the membership ballot, but actually... and it's been pointed out that a lot of his voters essentially said, I would rather have a leader who I always agreed with than one who will win a general election. Mm. So I'd rather have an unelectable pure leader than one who might win. But on the other hand, a decent chunk, maybe a quarter or so of his supporters didn't say that. A quarter of them did say that they'd rather someone electable. And so at first I looked at those numbers and thought, OK, actually there is... a constituency amongst his supporters who might look at him and think this isn't working. And to be honest, that was borne out with people I talked to. So of the relatively limited number of Corbyn voters I know, almost all of them seemed to be in that group.
Mm.
But that was from the first poll. There was another poll in May, about 6 weeks ago, that showed that the percentage who thought he was doing well after 8 months of everything that had happened, the percentage who thought he was doing well had actually gone up from 66 to 72%. Mm-hmm. So my gut on that was completely wrong. I thought the membership would be looking at him and thinking, oh, regrettably, this isn't working.
But an election was always in 2020, and maybe now it's not. So yeah. Maybe that will change. I don't know.
And that was 6 weeks ago. Now, I think it's fair to say that the PLP are assuming that the referendum will just be such a traumatic event in the eyes of the members that they'll feel... they'll come to the centres, the scales will drop off, and they'll think, oh, okay, this just isn't working, we've got to do something about it. We just really badly need a poll.
They won't have numbers on that yet, though. I can't see how they'd have a poll private.
No, I'm sure they don't. Well, I'm not sure, I have no knowledge, but no, I mean, I'd be surprised if they do.
Just making a purely fieldwork time perspective, I don't think they've got a private poll somewhere sitting there. I mean, I might be wrong. I don't see how they would have one so quickly.
No.
Labour members that...
You know... But, I mean, you've got to hope that we're going to see some numbers soon because it's such an important issue. And, you know, a poll that tells us how how their party is doing is going to shed a lot of light on whether we think that Corbyn is going to be beaten in the contest. Because essentially, it seems that the fundamental question for the PLP is, do you just challenge him, put one candidate forward and challenge him as a Corbyn against the rest of the party? Or do you just think even one candidate isn't going to beat him, so you have to wait for him to resign, because then you might be able to make an argument that he shouldn't be on the ballot, and you tell the members, right, this is who we're putting up. I don't know, but I feel like that decision can only really be properly informed by a good poll of members that tells us what they really think.
Well, Lawrence Lyanta-Lipinski, you've got some work to do. Lawrence of YouGov, that is, of course. Now, final point. So it was 5 minutes maybe or so on this. Start with Labour, but I think it has a wider point for UKIP, who we haven't talked about in the post-Brexit podcast, which we probably should talk about them. There is an argument. I'm going to make the argument, so therefore it's there. That actually, longer term, Labour's got another pretty big problem, which is the referendum result and free movement of Labour. And what to do about that. Now, we know the membership is very, very pro-immigration, very, very pro-remaining in the European Union. It would stand to reason from some of the results in places like Wigan and Burnley and Sunderland and Yorkshire, just generally in Yorkshire, Doncaster, for example, where Ed Miliband represents, had 70% leave or thereabouts. From all those numbers, stands to reason that a lot of Labour's heartlands are not happy with Britain's membership of the EU and therefore voted against it. Also, free movement of labour, presumably, you know, the economy more generally, you know, we can't know for sure. Labour's going to have to make a decision on that, isn't it? And there was this idea before the referendum, even with a Remain vote, that UKIP could do to Labour in the north of England and maybe even Wales, we haven't talked about Wales actually yet, what the SNP did in Scotland to Labour and basically sort of lose the battle and win the war. Well, they won the battle, you know, it looks like we're leaving the EU, but on this sort of anti-free movement of Labour, sort of pro-Brexit ticket, UKIP faces a real challenge to Labour, doesn't it? I mean, I know first past the post is a difficult barrier for them to overcome, but I mean, yes, there's the Corbyn question, but then there's the, you know, do we go back in the EU versus free movement of Labour question, which feels like it's as important to Labour as it is to the Tories.
Yeah, I think that's all absolutely right, and enormously difficult questions. I mean, on your first past the post point, I mean, obviously that hasn't stopped the SNP in Scotland. Mm. I mean, we would have made exactly those arguments about how difficult it was, and look where we are now. You know, Labour has long been a marriage of the old right and the herbivores. And, you know, this is really the first time that the herbivores have been absolutely unequivocally in charge of the party. You know, that's clearly an enormous problem for them. I think you're absolutely right. There are no easy answers. Perhaps there are no answers at all that can reconcile those two wings in
maybe
their,
this
in
is
their
another
entirety.
Argument for split.
Well, possibly, but I don't think that helps anyone. I mean, that's a logical conclusion, but I can't see how two split parties can have anything like the electoral force that the Labour Party has at the moment, let alone as much as it had 10 years ago. Mm. I don't know if there can be an answer, but I'm pretty certain that the path that it has been on for the last 10 months doesn't seem to be showing any signs of reassuring the old right, by which, just to be clear, I'm not talking about Blairites, I'm not talking about New Labour, I'm talking about the more traditional working class. Yeah, precisely. I think it's a problem that the next Labour leader is absolutely going to have at the top of her or his inbox, and you know whether they can solve it, I don't know. But if they don't, then there is going to be an enormous problem.
I mean, I want to finish on the SNP actually, because we haven't talked about them. We'll do a couple of minutes on Scotland in a minute. Sorry if that makes Scotland sound like an afterthought. That's not the intention. But I mean, on the Labour thing, just a brief comment. I mean, I think that what I found interesting was there was an article, I think, the week before the referendum, Len McCluskey wrote, where he talked about, I don't have it in front of me, but he talked about free movement and the sort of mass immigration in the Blair years, basically, as kind of an experiment. And he said that he put pressure on workers' wages and sort of security and work. But then he went on to say we should remain because the Tories. And I found it a really strange line of argument. And this is kind of like, you know, people that follow me on Twitter will know I voted Remain sort of begrudgingly. But I have sympathies with why people would have voted Leave rather than with the Leave side. And I think part of the reason, you know, is free movement of Labour is a good thing in many ways. But I think it's naive to think that did not contribute or hasn't contributed in some way, not the sole reason, but in some way, to the stagnant wages at the lower end of the labour market and, you know, insecurity as well, particularly in certain localised sectors like construction, where self-employment has, you know, risen through the roof. And we can get into that another day, I suppose, but just to add to your point, I think that Labour's got a real problem here, is that it wants to represent the working class and the middle class intellectuals, if you like, or whatever. But the C2DE's overwhelmingly backed Brexit, and There's a really serious question to answer there about why, which I don't think means you suddenly become UKIP or even have an anti-immigration stance or anything like that. But, you know, I do think it means that people like Tom Watson and Yvette Cooper, who have made noises about free movement and never really followed through, need to do so. That's my sort of
Yeah, and I mean, just very briefly to bring it back to the Tories, that in the leadership, we didn't talk at all about Stephen Crabbe. And I don't seriously think he's going to win, not least because I think the party is going to be looking for someone experienced at a time of crisis. And yeah, I just don't think this is the moment for him. But I think they are onto something with looking at what a working class blue collar Tory could do. And I think part of the response to the concerns you talked about then, it's not going to satisfy everyone, but at the very least, saying, look, immigration is ultimately good for the economy, but I recognise in your sector, in your local area, it's bringing enormous problems, and that's why we're going to be investing hugely in high-tech construction, in building skills, in apprenticeships, and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, lots of people are going to look at that and shrug and be cynical, but at least I think that's part of the answer. And another worry for Labour is that the Tories could start outflanking them on that kind of thing.
Finally, on Scotland, there was a poll today, I think it was Salvation, that had a new independence referendum question. And there's been a couple of these over the last week. This one had a 6-point lead for yes, 53-47. There does seem to be some ambiguity, actually, amongst Scots right now, which I don't find actually that surprising about whether they want another referendum. I'm sure that the idea of a referendum of any sort is probably horrifying for Scots after having the first one and now this and then the general election and the Holyrood elections. I mean, God, they must know their polling stations very, very well, let's put it that way. But there was also some comments today, I think, from the Spanish Prime Minister and certainly from the French. Now, I think these were to do with negotiating with Scotland now, as opposed to a hypothetical situation of an independent.
And of course, Scotland are saying that because of their own separatist movements.
Yes, yes. So I understand it's not about, no, never, ever do we want Scotland to be part of the EU. But there are barriers, aren't there? So maybe this assumption that Scotland, you know, definitely leaves the UK isn't quite right, particularly if the deal that gets negotiated is still some sort of Norway option or something. I don't know. I mean, maybe there is an identity thing, which is we are Scottish, we want to be in the EU, screw you, England, which has kind of possibly always been partly why they're so pro-EU, in my way. That's a guess. But it's not going to be easy for Nicola Sturgeon, is it? But then at the same time, of all the leaders in the UK right now, she's the one holding the strongest set of cards at the moment, surely.
Yeah, as ever, she's playing a blinder. She's got into a very, very smart position now of recognising there isn't going to be a referendum in the next year. But she is framing the debate very, very nicely of setting up the arguments that if and when the UK leaves the EU, Scotland wants to be in a different position. And if that is well established, if it's widely accepted that the Scottish electorate wants to be in the EU and they're being taken out against their wills, then there is a very strong logic that they need to have a say on this. Yeah, to be honest, I was surprised that the poll only showed such a narrow lead for a second referendum, or rather for independence. I think I had expected
I think
slightly
there was
more of a swing.
I think there was one over the weekend with 59%, so I don't want to seem like I'm cherry-picking, but it doesn't seem like it's been landslide.
Yeah, it's not exactly a clamour. So who knows, maybe actually what we're hearing is a bit more of a sort of Twitter political class story, and actually the reality in Scotland is that people aren't really connecting the EU to independence just yet. But I think it is something that Sturgeon is very, very smartly laying down the groundwork for it to be something to return to in a couple of years.
Yeah. So we'll leave it there. We'll leave it there for this episode. And I'm sure lots of these issues to come back to in the coming weeks, more than enough to be talking about. As we are going off air, there are some statements. Chris Shipp from ITV is saying that Angela Eagle will challenge Jeremy Corbyn tomorrow afternoon. If he has not resigned by then, Andy Burnham is in there trying to get him to.
So bringing chicken and a fishing rod.
So at the risk, I want to keep an eye on that because, you know, when this podcast is probably going to go out on Thursday, and therefore, you know, things might have moved on by then. Who knows? But Labour certainly looks like it's going to fail. I mean, Labour is going to have a leadership challenge. I find it incomprehensible that there'll be no challenge at all. I suppose the question mark is who it's going to be. Looks like it's Angela Eagle.
And just briefly on that, I mean, I am surprised that we've got to this place. Tom Watson got 2.5 times the number of votes that Angela Eagle did. If the PLP is looking at Corbyn and thinking, my God, we are headed to disaster under him, we need to beat him by anyone who's got the best chance, then you would go behind Tom Watson. Mm. He's proved to be popular amongst the membership far more than anyone else except Corbyn. So I'm surprised if they coalesce around Eagle. It doesn't seem to me to be the best way of getting rid of Corbyn, if that is the single goal that's considered more important than anything else.
Yeah,
but there you go.
I agree. I think, you know, she's impressive. Yeah, she did a very impressive PMQs and all the rest of it, but she voted for Iraq. I'm not sure she's charisma personified, dare I say it, sorry, not sure she is. I can see the memes now. But anyway, that's all we've got time for this week's Political Betting Polling Matters podcast. So much to dissect, we could be here all evening, but we'll leave it there. Leo, thanks very much for joining me, and do stay tuned for more episodes in the coming weeks. We should be back in the TV studio next week, but more on that soon, as there might be some changes. But thanks for listening, and do sort of share the podcast. If you're on iTunes, subscribe, give it a rating, give it a nice comment, hopefully. But do share it and get it out there. It really helps us. And that's all for now.
Well, I said that's all for now, but I just wanted to add a brief couple of minutes on the breaking news as I'm editing this on Thursday morning. Michael Gove has announced that he's going to be standing for the Conservative leadership, and because he doesn't think Boris Johnson has the leadership skills required at this time. And, I mean, God, I mean, I need just to publish this thing and get it out there, but it's you want to keep it up to date as much as possible. I mean, that really is a turn up for the books when you consider Michael Gove's role in the Leave campaign and his sort of almost partnership with Boris Johnson in leading that. He's now running for Prime Minister. I think the key point to take away from this, as this initially sinks in, is that the members poll we've seen is immediately out of date. I mean, Theresa May still be the person that's the front runner, but at the same time, Michael Gove is popular amongst the membership, so you've got to take that candidacy seriously. I'm sure he takes it seriously, which is why he's running. You know, if he just didn't believe in Boris, he would presumably have backed somebody else. But no, he's backing himself, which you can only imagine is because he thinks he can win. But Christ, this is a fast-moving situation, and when the dust settles, maybe we'll know a bit more. But it just goes to show you can't keep an eye off this story for 1 second. But yes, I mean, he clearly thinks he can win. Let's see what happens next. I mean, let's see if Boris even runs. He might decide that he's not going to. Now Michael Gove has jumped ship. But I'm sure by the time some of you listen to this, things would have moved on even further. So stay tuned for more episodes in the coming weeks where we'll be trying to make sense of what is, frankly, a chaotic moment in British political history.